Maya, you sound quiet to me.
Oh, no. Should I lean in? Does that help?
Yeah, that does seem to help. You sound
okay.
Kind of quiet.
Very good. From
Plus, okay. We can see you better when you lean in.
Well, yes.
And, you know, it's the feminist thing to do.
Right. That's right. We're all leaning in.
One must lean in. Hi, I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Maya Grant.
And this is The Sauce, the politics and pop culture podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
And today we're going to ruin, I don't know that we're going to ruin these movies. Don't they ruin themselves? We're going to ruin one-word title movies about contagious disease. So we're going to talk about these movies with one-word titles that are about pandemics, and we're going to do it with a really specific purpose because we are on a longer deep dive through the history of movies about communicable diseases, but we feel like if we start with these, we can sort of lay out the themes that we're going to be seeing again and again in our deeper dive.
Exactly. We're going to look at three movies, Outbreak, Contagion, and Quarantine.
That's right.
Before we do that, Maya, tell me now, what are you drinking? And also, you're in the middle of a cross-country drive. How are you? Where are you?
I am in Little Rock, Arkansas, the home of the Clinton Presidential Library. I drove from Charlotte, North Carolina to Little Rock. Tomorrow, I'm going to drive from Little Rock all the way to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And then I'm going to drive from Albuquerque all the way home. I was packing up all my equipment from my scuttled residency in Charlotte. The flight out, I thought I might as well share it because I think people might be interested. The flight out was crazy. LAX was so empty. It was fucking spooky as shit. It was like
one of those movies where everybody's died from a disease and you're the only person left.
You're the only yes, actually. That's exactly what it was like. Everybody who worked in the LA airport was wearing masks. No one in Charlotte airport was wearing masks. on the plane itself, there was only one person per row. And there wasn't even like one person in every row. Like it was actually the flight of my dreams. I was wearing an N95 mask with like a rubber, like a mask over it with a bandana over that and glasses and a hat so that I could just be protected.
You were like the Invisible Man.
I looked exactly like the Invisible Man. And I'm staying at an Airbnb because I figured that there's less traffic in an Airbnb than at a hotel. And hotels have the kind of canned air. And I have unopened containers of Clorox wipes, so I'm just wiping. I brought my own pillow cases. I've tried to be very careful in doing this trip is what I'm trying to say.
That's understandable, as you don't want to spread anything or bring anything back home.
I do not. And I am drinking what would be called, if I'm being kind about it, a lime rum Ricky. But it's what I can manage on the road. But it's actually quite tasty.
Rum, lime, and what?
Rum, lime, sugar, soda water.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
It's all right. I'm surprised at how well it turned out, actually. As I was making it, I was pretty grumpy, but it's actually quite good.
I'm impressed. That's resourceful, in my opinion. You've done well. You're on the road.
Wait, I just have to tell you this really quick story because I am in the South right now.
Okay.
My brother lives in the South, in Alabama. I've spoken of this before. And he was telling me that it's maddening because, and he says, like, it's so fucking Southern. Like, when you go to the supermarket, 90% of the women are wearing masks and 90% of the men are not wearing masks. He's like,
really?
It is so, like, Southern sexism. Like, they are not going to be put out by anything. Like, why should they have to do anything that's going to inconvenience them? And like, it was really interesting because on the road there was construction and there was this big sign being like, drive carefully. We're all in this together. Like, hey guys, there are working humans. Please don't drive like assholes. It's like, yeah, How dare you make me want to wear a mask? God. So how are you doing and what are you drinking?
Well, I'm drinking wine, red wine. I believe it's a California Pinot Noir from one of my wine clubs. But I think at this point I'll just say my wine club. It's the one I've settled on. And I'm fine. This shirt was $7.
I've noticed that you're continuing. Everybody,
yes.
Go follow Rebecca on Instagram at GynoStar. It has become a fashion blog for her thrifty achievements.
Thank you. I'm trying to not make it strictly a fashion blog, but I just, like, I'm not going anywhere. There's nothing else to post. I'm not baking bread. What else could I do? But yeah, this shirt was $7. I'm hanging out. It's fine. Just trying to take it one day at a time because,
yeah,
it's like this weird stasis, you know?
Yeah. And I think people are also like turning a corner where we're getting to the place where we're like, I don't know how much longer I can do this.
Yeah, it definitely went from this is fine to okay, I can do this for some time, but I'm not sure how long. And
I'm not sure whatever. I want to. Yeah.
Not sure I want yeah. to.
So it's nice to have this little road trip, although it was heartbreaking to pack up my studio and mourn for all I lost, but it's all right. I don't know. One thing that I've been finding hilarious that I really wanted to share with our listeners is, you know, we've been trying to piss people off for so long, Rebecca. We've been trying to go after Bernie bros and Chapo douchebags and incels, but finally we pissed off a group of people. Finally.
It's true. We really made ourselves some enemies.
Finally.
Now, tell me, Maya, how did you come across this? Was it that they had linked to our website?
Okay. So every once in a while, I check the stats on our WordPress page, and it tells you where it's referred from. Mm-hmm. And I saw it was referred from Reddit. And I was like, finally, finally, the incels right. are finally, like, we've made some incel enemies. They're going to come after us. I mean, this is the dream. Like, we're finally right. living the dream.
It's why we've been doing this this entire
whole
time.
It's just to get the attention of incels.
Mostly, at least, yeah.
So I clicked on the Reddit link, and it went to an Adam Driver fan Reddit. And then we got hate mail from an Adam Driver fan. And I've noticed that the Adam Driver episode has been getting a lot of listens. And I personally think it's mostly because, like, we are trying to answer a very important mystery of the universe, which is, like, why Adam Driver? Like, why? Why?
What's going – yeah. What's the appeal? What magic is he wielding that somehow we are immune to?
How did we become, like, how did he become, like, the Dustin Hoffman of our generation? We'll be calling back to that a little later in this episode. and so we said some things that I think were all extremely true. I think everybody should listen to that episode. But we have pissed off the Adam Driver fangirls.
Yeah. Were they all girls? Do we know that? I mean, I guess we could probably conclude they all.
We only got
want to disparage any
angry messages from girls. We only got Fair angry enough. Messages from girls. We haven't gotten angry messages from boys. But we got a message on Facebook. Like, these people are going out of their way.
Yeah, no, we really angered them by noting some of the flaws. And that's obviously a very subjective term, but
some of the physical characteristics.
Physical characteristics that are not traditionally considered to be ideal platonic beauty in
our society. But also, we bring them up because they neutralize what would otherwise be straight assholeness, you know, like the straight glorious assholeness. They sort of cut it a little bit. These physical characteristics.
Right. I mean, that was sort of our ultimate conclusion.
Yeah.
Is that he has a vulnerability to him because he's unconventional looking and that makes it difficult to not sympathize with any character he plays, and then how that can be problematic when he's playing a character who actually is kind of it's terrible.
Like a, yeah, yeah. So
it can also be wonderful, but like the point being, they took a lot of issue with
a
us
lot of offense.
It, having yeah. an overbite. Like they yeah. really did not care for that.
Yeah, they got really angry that we were talking about what his teeth do to his overall performance. So we finally made some enemies, Rebecca.
I know. I feel proud of that. It does feel like having staked a claim on a certain territory of the map, but it also feels like definitely punching down.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I have no issue with Adam Driver or his devoted fans.
Not at all. Not no, really. we're just trying to like discuss what he means in the social imaginary. And it exactly. might not be entirely what they want to hear, but we have nothing against their desire for him.
It's nothing personal.
No. It's just business, guys.
Okay. I'm glad we got that out of the way. It is really something to have complete strangers be so angry at you, but that's the life we lead.
Oh, yeah, but you're used to that. You're used to that.
Not usually nice people like Adam Driver fans. Anyway, real quickly, before we continue and get on with the meat of our show, I just want to thank the members of our Patreon. You all have been so great, and you're allowing us to do things like rent movies.
Yeah.
Because some of these movies we're watching are not available for free. And we are actually starting to use some of the funds to do our research so we can have more better shows. And
to also plan our very exciting plans for 2020 once we're allowed to leave our fucking houses.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
2021, you mean?
No. No.
We'll see. When it happens,
we'll do it. All right.
Okay. So you ready to get into these movies?
Let's do it.
Okay, we have three movies that we decided to focus on for our first foray into the world of movies about pandemics, movies about contagious disease. And I want to start with the 1995 movie Outbreak. It's also chronologically the first one of the three.
Yes, and I think it's extremely interesting because when we watch these movies, Rebecca thought Outbreak was going to be what Contagion ended up being. And when I started watching Contagion, I thought it was going to be what Outbreak ended up being. So let's start with what did you think Outbreak was supposed to be?
I didn't know that much about it, but I remembered the ads for it when it came out. And I knew it had this like crazy all-star cast. Like a whole bunch of prestigious actors were in it. Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, Donald Sutherland, Morgan Freeman, and more.
Kevin people. Spacey, so, Cuba Kevin Gooding Jr. I mean, come on.
Everybody in it is somebody. And I don't know. I had the impression that it would be a serious kind of thriller. Not necessarily wholly realistic, but at least attempting at realistic.
Attempting an interpretation of like
what an outbreak might really be like and how scary it might be.
Yeah.
Also, I knew there'd be a monkey. So I was expecting a lot from that monkey. And it didn't turn out to be that.
No, instead it turned out to be ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. I think if I had gone into it, if someone had said, it's a crazy action thriller, it's just this fun sort of Hollywood big time action helicopter chase kind of movie, at least I would have been better prepped for it. And maybe I would have liked it more on that level. But I spent so much of my viewing time just being stunned by how terrible it was.
It's okay. It's really terrible. I think we just have to get into what makes it like so bad.
Yes.
Because it does start with this kind of serious, like working people in the government dealing with diseases. And then it goes absurd. Like the entire outbreak ends up being located to just one small rural town. Mm-hmm. It's full of all of these like neat and tidy endings when the whole point of something like this is that there is no like neat and tidy. It's like every thread is perfectly picked up at the end. They find mm-hmm. the original source. They figure out every mystery. The contagion ends up only being located to one small rural town. So it's entirely contained. It's solvable. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's incredibly unrealistic. And so many things that I think maybe I would not have realized are unrealistic really jumped out. I mean, there's the stuff that's clearly just plot holes and silliness, like the disease originates in Africa, I think in Zaire. Yes. And it comes to the United States, and immediately the investigators know that there's an animal vector that they need to find. And
yes.
What makes you think that? Like, what basis do you conclude that an animal vector had to be involved? They just somehow know that. And I feel like I wouldn't have missed that plot hole at any time. But then there were other things, like the people in the town. There's this one little Northern California town. It was like,
yes,
in the middle of the woods, that is infected, and they quarantine it, and then the people try to escape the quarantine. They get all fed up, and they sort of try to drive through the military.
With their prepper, like, trucks yeah. and guns. They're like the rednecks trying to, like, get away from the military.
And, like, Coke-funded Tea Party protesters in Michigan notwithstanding. I think we've seen how, when a town is actually quarantined, as they have been, like here in New Rochelle, they shut down that entire town and people comply.
Yeah.
They comply with that because that's scary yeah. shit.
And there was also this, like, it was so hacky. I think that was the thing that was so, like, absurd about it. It was such a fucking hacky movie. Like, well, first of all, if we're going to go to unrealistic things, the fact that the disease goes to becoming airborne, like it mutates within 24 hours.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
It wasn't airborne and then it is immediately. So now you have two viruses essentially.
And there's like this weird hacky thing where like this woman is sick, this mother of two daughters is sick, and the rest of her family isn't, and the government comes to the house and takes her away and shears her hair and makes her go into the showers. No, I'm sorry, that's a Holocaust movie. But it was like that. It was exactly like that. It was like, it was shot like Schindler's List. It was yeah. ridiculous.
Yeah, but pretty much. They really do evoke that kind of like a Holocaust implication with this like ultra militarized occupation of the town and certain people being taken away with their things. It's hard to miss. It seems like yeah. they had to be doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
The ultimate hacky thing is the monkey that they're trying to track down.
The monkey.
Because it has the antibodies.
Right.
Is like hanging out in the woods in Marin. And this little girl makes friends with it.
Yeah, he comes and visits her window at night, and he'll only come out for her.
He'll only come out for the little girl.
This little blonde girl.
Yeah, of course. So it's just as corny and formulaic a Hollywood movie as you could possibly come up with. It has the love story with the main character played by Dustin Hoffman. He's divorced from Rene Russo, and so it's only a matter of time before they realize they still want to be together.
You have the, like, bad military guy. And so, like, oh, yeah. all of a sudden, Dustin Hoffman and Cuba Gooding Jr., who are supposed to be these, like, medical scientists or, like, action heroes who are, like, jumping from helicopters onto boats and, like, taking over TV stations. Like, it's ridiculous.
Ridiculous is the only word for it.
Yeah.
And kind of in some places nonsensical. Like they want to bomb the town, which, okay, there's another thing that I now know to be unrealistic. Not that I wouldn't put it past our government to bomb a town if it had some reason to, but this belief that the government and the military are so brutally efficient,
yeah,
cruelly efficient at stopping an outbreak. That's more fantastical than anything else in the movie.
That the president would be like, is the outbreak limited to this one town? Just wipe it out.
Just wipe it out.
Just bomb the town.
Because you have to stop it from getting out beyond there.
Yeah.
Like, just the president who really cares about stopping the outbreak, and they're willing to stop at nothing to prevent it from spreading. But then also, Dustin Hoffman's character wants to find the monkey vector because he believes that it has the antibodies and they can use that to create an antibody serum.
Which they do instantly. Like, they find the monkey. First of all, they find the fucking monkey, and an hour later they have it. And Renee Russo, who's gotten infected, all of a sudden, like, right? She goes from being, like having the bubonic plague to being, like, dewy-skinned and 10 years younger and, like, Vaseline on the lens from, like, an antibody serum they make in 10 minutes from a monkey that somehow magically, after being in the woods of Marin, actually just really wants to hang out with this one human little blonde girl.
And hasn't infected anybody else.
No, has not.
So they want to stop Dustin Hoffman. Donald Sutherland wants to stop Dustin Hoffman from finding the monkey. It's not just that he's ignoring the attempts to find the monkey and doesn't believe they'll work and is proceeding with his plan to kill everyone in the town, but he's actively trying to stop Dustin Hoffman from pursuing the alternate, less bomby solution.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? We're just going to bomb the shit out of this place. Let's just be done.
Yeah, it's not clear why he's so gung-ho on
that. But this is really important because that's the other thing that's bullshit. So the movie starts like 20 years prior in Africa. It's really Vietnam.
it is, right? If the title didn't say whatever, Zaire, whatever it was, you'd read it as Vietnam because it looks like, honestly, I think they recycled a set from either a Vietnam movie or maybe a TV show.
Absolutely. That's exactly what they did. It's like jungly somewhat.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to feel like, oh, the American military intervened and did this atrocity, and now it's being revisited 20 years later, and Donald Sutherland is trying to cover it up by, like, not letting Dustin Hoffman find the monkey. Like, that's the kind of convoluted logic, which is, like,
it's entirely unclear how the murder of the town aids in that cover-up or whatever, but okay.
But it's also this thing where you're like, the U.S. commits atrocities all the time, nobody finds out, it's fine.
Right. It just seems to me that if you bomb a whole town in Northern California, that's going to call more attention to the issue than anything.
Yeah.
Your cover-up's been going pretty well. No one's really on to you.
Again.
Just let it be.
Unclear. Now, how was it? I don't know how this was for you, but it was a very odd experience for me to watch Kevin Spacey and Dustin Hoffman, who were recently sort of outed by the Me Too movement, and to see them in their most kind of smug, king of the world performance selves is very odd. It was a little odd for me.
It was a little off-putting. I didn't mind it as much with Kevin Spacey because it was an earlier performance. He was just an up-and-coming actor who wasn't sure yet whether he could abuse people with impunity, or whether he'd really have to try to hide it.
Right.
And you could kind of, you could see that, you know?
Yeah.
You could see the uncertainty.
That's right. That's right. Except when he got to have the good dying, you know, chewing
the wholesome death.
The wholesome death.
All right, we have to talk about Contagion. Contagion is the movie that I sort of thought Outbreak would be.
And I watched Contagion waiting for it to become Outbreak. There's this moment very early where they're like, they finally located the virus and they're looking at it. They're like, I see some DNA from pig and DNA from bat. And I immediately was ready for, like, cut to top of mountain, evil genius, right, splicing pig and bat together. Yeah. Like, I was waiting for a solid hour in that movie, waiting for the sort of, you know, like the tablecloth to be like, I was like waiting the whole time. And then I was like, no, this is just a very sober, procedural, speculative film about, like, what would this look like? And it, so much of it was so familiar. I mean, this came out in 2011. They're talking about social distancing and don't touch your face. And the body's being buried in plastic and they're setting up the hospitals and like the Javits Center. It's like, it's exactly what's happening now. And it's sober and measured. And we get to know this whole ensemble of characters, but never too well because they're all fulfilling their own purpose and sort of doing their jobs.
Right. It's not following a single heroic protagonist.
Lead. And it's so bizarre to watch a movie where you're waiting for it to turn into something else and it just keeps being what it is. And then I went and was like, who directed this? And it's Steven Soderbergh. I was like, no wonder it's so good. It's actually this very kind of thoughtful, speculative movie where they're doing the magic if, like, what if this contagion breaks out in the United States? And the sort of conclusions they come to are based on the given circumstances of what would happen. So they're saying, like, we would want to make a vaccine. Once we make a vaccine, it takes a while to make enough vaccine for, like, everybody. So maybe there would be a lottery system to decide who gets the vaccine. Like, all of the speculation was based very deeply on fact, which was very interesting.
Yeah, it was clear that the screenwriters had closely consulted with actual contagious disease experts. And the way you know that is that a lot of the exposition they're giving you via the characters in the movie is stuff I've learned over the past month from listening to contagious disease experts on NPR and reading articles. There's a whole scene where I think it's Kate Winslet is explaining the R-naught, which is the rating of how contagious something is. I was like, I already know this stuff.
Totally. Totally. One thing I found particularly delightful, because as some of you longtime listeners may know, I'm not a fan of Gwyneth Paltrow. And she is in the opening scene and she's dead within 10 minutes. It's fabulous.
Barely even a spoiler, because it's the first thing that happens in the movie.
And then they like carve open her head. Like, they like, oh, it's just delightful.
You kept telling me to watch it. Like, watch Contagion, watch Contagion. So I finally watched it and I texted Maya 10 minutes in, like, I know why you like this movie so much. Gwyneth Paltrow dies in 10 minutes. But it is, that's a great way for the movie to signal to you what it's going to do.
And what it's not going to do. Like, our biggest movie stars that we have in this, we kill them. We don't keep them alive so you can see them any longer. If the virus gets them, oh well, this is how the shit works. Like, it does not care whether you're Gwyneth Paltrow or, like, it doesn't care.
And it's not dramatic. It's not a build up to a dramatic death where she sacrifices herself or some shit to save somebody. It's just she dies.
Because she caught it.
Her head cut open because she caught it.
That's it. And there's this wonderful moment, which, again, it's not like big, bad, evil government. It's like, this is how this actually works, where at one point, Lawrence Fishburne is in it, and he's kind of the head CDC guy. He calls his wife and is like, get out of town, get to Atlanta. Like, come here right now. Because it's about to take over, and he's afraid for her. And he's like, don't tell anyone. And then she calls a friend of hers. And then he's kind of publicly scolded for using his inside knowledge for personal purposes. And you're like, even though they keep him working because he's very good at his job, he has to be sort of publicly reprimanded and not allowed on the press conferences anymore. And it's these delicate political sort of dances that are happening all the time right now. And we're watching them happen.
Yeah. It is why everyone's talking about that movie right now, because it feels weirdly prescient. But that's just because I think it was based on research with the CDC and other agencies.
It's limited in its melodrama. And I think where it falls down is when it goes to melodrama. Like, the few moments where it sort of like surrenders to melodrama, where I guess at some point the screenwriter or maybe Soderbergh were like, all right, we got to give the audience something. It's like, those were the moments that were the least satisfying to me. I'm like, don't worry about me. This is plenty interesting.
The procedural is the interesting part.
Absolutely. And then the final moment of that, of the movie, and the sort of big reveal that we've been building to the entire time, is that the reason that the bat DNA and the pig DNA encountered each other is because of habitat destruction that's leading to climate change by a multinational corporation. It's like they save that beat to the very, it's the final moment of the film. It's brilliant. That's brilliant.
That's great. And it's such a great contrast to Outbreak.
Well, weren't you expecting, you were telling me that like with Outbreak, you were thought, oh, this is going to be a climate change movie.
Yeah. So I went into Outbreak really looking for what they were going to identify as the source of the disease. You know, was it going to be Africa, monkeys, you know, like who or what is going to be the scary disease-causing agency, the thing that causes you to get sick? And it turned out the villain in the movie really is the military, which is an interesting thing in and of itself. It wasn't, the movie in a lot of ways wasn't even really about disease. It was about something else.
Yes.
There's a moment, what you're referring to is there's a moment early on when Dustin Hoffman and his team are in the African village where this disease has resurfaced for the first time since the 60s. And they're talking to the physician of the village, I guess. And he explains that their patient zero, the person who spread it first, seems to have gotten it from tainted well water. It seems to have come from the village's well or something like that. I don't remember the exact details. He had gone on a journey into the jungle and come back, and then the well became tainted. And I fully was like, oh, okay. Well, this is going to be an environmental thing. It's going to be some kind of like pollution thing or climate change.
Virus as biological weapon.
But not an outbreak.
That ends up being why Donald Sutherland like wants to keep it hush hush.
Aliens thing.
They want to keep the source to use it when they want to deploy it.
Right. But then, okay, I'm not going to get into the plot structure problems in that movie. What I'd rather do is praise Contagion for that fantastic ending beat, particularly because in a way it's much more powerful than forefronting for the entire movie. Like, this is corporate greed causing climate change and this is the consequence of it. It's much more like it feels like it's just a natural disaster. It's just this thing that happened.
Right.
Where there's like a little bit of globalism as a fear in there because Gwyneth Paltrow's character gets it on a trip to Hong Kong and Macau. And so there's a little bit of that. But then ultimately, after you've been through this whole experience and realized the potential consequences of this pandemic occurring, then you're hit with.
And this is where
this
it's
is why. Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
So finally, we have to talk about Quarantine, which was chosen for this list primarily because it has a one-word title.
A one-word title. And also because we're all quarantining right now. I mean.
Exactly.
So Quarantine, guys, is Outbreak meets Blair Witch Project.
That's really need say no more.
That's all it is. It's a found footage movie. It's pretty bad. It's about like a young local news reporter goes to the firehouse to like hang out with firemen all night to do like a little feature story about like what it's like to be a fireman. And luckily they get called out on something, which is very exciting for her and her cameraman, because the last thing you want is to just be stuck there with guys shooting hoops all night. And they end up in this building where this old woman essentially has rabies. And all of a sudden it turns out that it's a disease that is spreading. The CDC just kind of magically shows up after 5 minutes, which is, we're going to get to that. Like, the CDC has these like epic FBI-like powers in all of the, it's really something. So like 5 minutes after the fire department gets there and they see that this woman has this contagious rabies-like thing, the CDC shows up, shuts the entire apartment building down. And everybody is stuck there in quarantine while more and more people get sick and infected. And it has the Blair Witch ending where our hero, our newscaster, says the last thing to the camera. And then the camera like, because she's been killed by a zombie. It's essentially a zombie movie.
Yes. And what we found when researching movies that are about pandemics, contagion, disease outbreaks, all that stuff. Within reason, I tried to collect a list of most of the movies that involve an explicit talking about disease. Mm-hmm. It is an infection. It's not just metaphorically an infection or something like that.
Okay.
And I put them into categories because I am only nominally a post-structuralist. I like to pretend it being a post-structuralist a lot of the time, but I just love a good categorization. And what I found is that most of them fit into the category of horror zombie movies of some kind. Now, within that, there are obviously subcategories because you do have your zombie type ones, and then there's like body horror, and there's possession, body snatcher kind of ones. There's different right. subgenres there. But most of the movies that address contagious disease that I could find are horror movies, are like kind of low budget.
Yep.
Just straight up horror movies. The other category that had the like the second most entries would be medical thrillers.
Mm.
So I would put Outbreak and Contagion in that category, even though they're very different movies. And I would say that within that category, you also have some subcategories where Outbreak is action movie.
Right.
And Contagion is more of the procedural, investigative kind of serious movie.
Yes.
Which there are also a few of. But anyway, back to quarantine.
Back to quarantine. So what's interesting, and this I think brings us to one of the things that we want to talk about, which are like the bigger themes that we're seeing yes. again and again in these movies. And there's something really interesting about that, is that in quarantine, what ends up happening is 5 minutes after they realize that this old woman is like rabid and infected, mm-hmm. the CDC again like shows up and locks down the house. And when people try to escape so that they don't get bitten by the zombies, they get shot at by the government.
Which is sort of preposterous if you think about it, because it's pretty evident who's been infected and who hasn't.
Yes.
It's not like there's a prolonged
like
period
they have
of,
rabies. Like yeah. they instantly get rabies and foam at the mouth. It's yeah. it's absurd.
It would even actually probably have been a better movie if they had said, well, there's this like period of time where this
so
virus
you don't
incubates.
No, that's right.
Yeah, where you're non-symptomatic and you don't even know if you have it or not. Or maybe you could have it, but try to escape anyway and no one else would know you had it. But no, it's just pretty straightforward who has it and who doesn't. And yet they feel the need to quarantine this building
right.
and just so, let everybody die.
So you're being trapped by big government. I mean, to yeah. me, that's one of the themes that I saw in all three of these movies. And I think what our hope is that by starting with these three one-word pandemic movies, we're going to find the themes that we're going to revisit. And I feel like
yeah.
the theme of government and military power is huge in
yeah,
all
it's
of these.
Huge.
It's huge.
It's always there.
And it's complicated because on the one hand, the doctors are who saves us. They mm-hmm. are really the heroes. And it made me realize one of the things that's so strange about the right wing is that like they love the military, but they hate the government. And you're like, but don't you see how those things like kind of are the
yeah.
same?
They're not the only are they the same, but the military is the government's potential tool
yeah, that's
for
what
enforcing
there.
Its power over you, which is the thing you don't like about the government.
And yet,
but
I
think
well,
right. But now that I think about that, it's really the police that are doing that in any direct way in people's lives. The military are enforcing the government's power on
other people.
So that's good. That's okay. You can
that's
support
okay.
that.
So, but then that's what's so scary about these movies. All of a sudden, the military is enforcing
right.
its power on us, and we don't like that.
Right, like, right, right. Like, and disease, yeah, disease becomes the mechanism, the trigger
right.
that creates that situation that allows that to happen. So it's not even the disease itself that's the problem, like especially an outbreak. Obviously, the disease is the MacGuffin. The monkey's the MacGuffin. That fucking monkey.
You're obsessed with that monkey.
I am obsessed with the monkey.
You are obsessed with that monkey.
Let's just take a moment for the monkey, and then we're going to continue talking about the government and the CDC, okay?
Okay.
So the monkey in Outbreak. I remember it from the ads for the movie. And I assumed that it would have a large role. I thought that was clear. The first shot of the movie is a close-up of the monkey. Close-up of a monkey screaming. So I'm like, monkey screaming, like in my notes. And it makes sense because it's 1995. So we've all just sort of become aware that AIDS probably originated with a chimp or other ape or monkey.
And 95... maybe the cocktail has just appeared, so we're really at the end of the sort of Holocaust of AIDS.
It's still a thing, and we're all kind of just sort of reeling from the last 10 years and what's happened. But I think that there's, a very clear association between the monkey and disease. So that's what I'm expecting. And I'm wondering how that's going to figure in and how they're going to... use the monkey to imply the origination of infection.
Right.
And they don't. The monkey actually turns out to be the good guy in a lot of ways. The monkey saves the day. And it's the military that are bad.
Yeah.
Not even the whole military, because as you pointed out, Dustin Hoffman is...
And Cuba Gooding Jr.
himself working for the military, and they're the heroes.
Cuba Gooding Jr., scientist slash helicopter stunt
virtuoso helicopter pilot. Yeah.
Okay, this is the moment where Rebecca said something when we were, like, planning, which... I think is so true.
What?
About how
the thing about the player, right?
Yes.
The Outbreak feels like it's a movie from within the movie The Player, which if you haven't seen, it's Robert Altman classic, right?
It's so about good.
Hollywood. Tim Robbins plays this Hollywood executive who's like kind of slowly going crazy, and it's all against this backdrop of Hollywood and Hollywood studios.
The absurdity,
exactly. And there are movies within the movie, of course, that are parodies of Hollywood movies. And this could have been one of them.
Absolutely.
100%. You have these distinguished actors, really great actors, playing these dopey parts, saying these stupid, god-awful things with utmost seriousness and conviction.
Yeah.
And it's so corny and over the top. The dialogue is so cliched. It feels like a parody.
Yeah. And it is. It is.
And it is. So back to the monkey.
Back to the monkey.
So I was, through most of the movie, I wasn't sure like what our relationship with this monkey is. You know, whether we're afraid of it. Is it a bad thing? Is it a dangerous thing? And I guess in the end, the monkey is just sort of like nature. It's this innocent that has no what is your hand gestures, Maya?
Nature.
Ooh, okay.
It's like ooh. Nature, like ooh.
Yeah. But it's innocent of all this. It doesn't know what diseases it carries or what antibodies. It just wants to make friends with a little blonde girl. And it's crucial to solving the mystery and saving everybody. I was really surprised by that because it just seems like such a prime opportunity for the monkey to represent whatever you want to villainize.
Right.
Except, I guess, the military.
But what's more important is like Donald Sutherland being like using it as a biological weapon. And that happens in Quarantine as well, where like the discovery that they make right before the cameraman and the reporter, like right before they're pulled to death by rabid, whatever, infected people, they discover that like some doomsday cult that's hanging out in the attic of this building, some doomsday cult has stolen this virus from a chemical weapons laboratory. And like that is what's caused all of this. And that was the moment that I was expecting. It's almost like in its absence, it's there. The fact that it's absent from Contagion actually puts it there because that's what I was expecting. Like this idea of the virus as something that man is trying to put its hands on and control and deploy to its own ends. And like, that's where it all goes wrong. Like, I feel like that's absolutely there.
Yeah. Is it in Contagion? You think by its absence it's there?
It was in my head. So then yes, it's just there.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. I think the government is portrayed as very competent in Contagion.
The CDC is, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the government. But it's the CDC is so on top, and the WHO.
Yes.
They're just like working together. They know their shit. They are, there is like one death and they are there. They are quarantining Matt Damon. They're
totally.
They can't control it. And we understand why, because it spreads so fast. But you watch them tracing. You know, they trace Gwyneth Paltrow's steps to try to figure out where she contracted it and who she may have given it to. And they're just really on their game.
Yeah.
They're so uber competent. And the CDC in Outbreak are also, well, it's really Dustin Hoffman who's on top of everything. And there's a really kind of funny line where after they visit the village in Africa, and first encounter the disease. And then they get back to the States and Dustin Hoffman's like, it's going to come here to the States. And people are like, well, how do you know? I just feel it. He just knows it.
Yeah.
There's no research or evidence behind this opinion. There's no explanation of the means by which diseases spread that would justify his fear. He has an instinct for it.
He has a real feeling for it.
He's Maverick, you know?
Yes!
He's just damn good at it. He doesn't have to try. But the CDC in it are, they're just like nice. They're the ones who believe him.
Yeah.
And help him.
They're nice. They're competent. They're scientists. But there's still, I don't know, there's still this like weird tension between the CDC and the scientists as these experts and the fear of militarization. That's the thing that it's like militarization is this horrible, creepy thing in all of these movies where all of a sudden it's like giant tanks are deployed. There are these vehicles that shouldn't be there. There are rules being put in place.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the movie in Outbreak, what it is trying to convey when it has the citizens of the little town trying to ram their way past the military vehicles and out of the quarantine, it's that they feel trapped. And of course, quarantine is all about that. The horror in that movie, beyond the rabid zombie people being scary, is that you're trapped in there with them. You can't run away.
And the very people who are supposed to be helping you are ones who are like trapping you.
Exactly. They're trapping you in there. And they don't put any value on your individual life or existence.
That's right.
The fear in both of those cases seems to center around the idea that the disease is scary. But what's really scary is how it changes the dynamic between you and those in power.
Well, yeah, you just become a number. You just become like a vector of infection. And so your life loses meaning.
Yeah, so that's kind of a common theme that we're seeing.
Yes.
Okay, so I think we should definitely get into some of the other big themes that we've noticed and how they play out in these particular films.
One thing that I notice in all of these films is the need to make visible the spread of this invisible thing. Now, quarantine is the most sort of boring. they are rabid and foaming at the mouth. Done. Like, we see it. It might as well be a zombie movie where their, like, jaw falls off and you're like...
Okay. But I want to pause there, though.
Okay.
Because there are so many of these types of movies where the disease turns the people into zombies or makes them violent in some way, and then they attack you. And I find that really interesting. Yes, it is a way of taking this invisible fear and making it visible. How do you fear a microscopic virus? It could be anywhere, you know, and that in itself, I think we at least now know, is truly scary. But in these horror movies, they externalize it.
Yes.
So instead of being afraid that I'm going to catch something, I'm actually afraid of this monster.
Yes. But I feel like with both Outbreak and Contagion, you see something very different where they're trying to, or at least at moments, they're trying to show you, like, I remember with the Gwyneth Paltrow scene, and I know that I'm more sensitive to it because we're in this moment. The opening scene is her in an airport.
She's like sweating.
A little bit. And she coughs a little bit. And then she like puts her hand in a tray of peanuts. And like the camera just kind of lingers on her hand doing that. And in this moment, I think both my husband and I were like, oh God, she's touching the peanuts. Like, so that's what it's looking for. It's looking for those moments of transmission by focusing on these moments of human contact. And that's what it's trying to do visually. It's not turning it into a zombie who's going to come get me. It's like, oh my God, she touched the peanuts.
And the next scene after that, I think, is a Japanese guy on a train. And you see him holding the bar, standing in the train, and he leaves and the camera lingers on where his hand was.
Like, yep.
Each thing that he touches. And absolutely, now that this is something that's in the forefront of our minds, that's really resonant.
But absolutely.
It's so well realized. You can see those places where the infected person has been, and you know where the contamination is, and that they're so mundane. They're just everyday objects, places.
But then when they're in crowded place, you're aware of the crowdedness of it. He's on like a crowded train, and that's what makes it so like...
I just want to mention that in my favorite of these three, obviously, Outbreak, they try to make the invisible visual by... There's a scene in the movie theater where an infected guy is coughing, and you sort of follow the particle of cough.
Yeah.
The camera follows it as it goes into the crowded movie theater. It's a very clumsy attempt at literally making it visual.
I thought the best moment, though, is when the Dustin Hoffman character realizes it's gone airborne. And all of a sudden you see his eye sort of like, it's like he's tracing it with his eye and it goes up into the vent. And you're like... Okay, we get so that was that, but
I actually did like that moment.
it was a great moment, but those are the moments where you see them trying to anchor this scary thing into something that you can see.
Yes.
And I feel like that's the big challenge of this kind of storytelling. And I feel like that, the government, I feel like the fear of the other. All of these things are things that we're going to be seeing again and again and again.
And it, in relation to the crowds, the crowded movie theater and the crowded train, urbanness, city life has for so long been associated with disease spread, often because, you know, like immigrants in cities had to live in very close conditions and not with great hygiene. So...
Well,
it's a long history of that.
Two things. One, since we're wrapping up, if you guys go to my Instagram feed, I have not been posting pictures of myself in cute outfits. I've been posting pictures of images from the plague archive. And I found ads for Formamint, which is a mint that's supposed to kill all the bacteria. And it's always like some damsel in a horrible city popping a Formamint tablet so that she's not infected by this mass of male dirt.
Yeah, I love it. It's such a big theme in early cinema, like silent cinema, the innocent young girl coming into this urban space and how threatening it is, how dangerous it is, the peril
yeah.
of crime and disease.
But also in terms of the immigrant. So I did a project, this is years back, about it was called Nostalgia for the Mud, Nostalgia de la Boue. And it's about the ways that sometimes as a Jew, as a model minority, I feel a little nostalgic for when we were like syphilitic, you know, evil disease carriers. And I've been looking at like model minorities and looking at the way that 100 years ago we were not considered model minorities. And both the Jew and the Chinese were associated with rats. Like there were pictures of Chinese on rat poison packaging.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And so there's a way that the relation to disease, and Jews were associated in late 19th century Europe with syphilis. Jews and rats were associated. Chinese and rats were associated, obviously, because of the living quarters that they were in. They were more likely to have to suffer the pest of that. But then rats are connected to the plague. And so like these things are all sort of braided into what we think of as like the urban danger of disease.
And the othering of disease.
Yes. And I think we're going to see that again as we take deeper dives.
Okay.
All right, friends. If you want to email us with your thoughts about plague movies or TV shows that you would like us to watch and ruin as we take these deeper dives, email us, saucepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on the Twitter, on the Insta, on the Facebook at Sauce Podcast. And please go to our Patreon and support us as we continue to figure out exciting ways to get awesome stuff to your brain.
Patreon.com/saucepodcast.
Yes.
There are many membership levels you can check out. Thank you to all our current and continuing patrons. Also, you can reach me directly. I am at GynoStar on all the social medias. You can see my outfits on Instagram and my quips on Twitter. A whole lot of it.
And you can find me at Maya Garance anywhere you are looking for Maya Garances. And we will see you next week.
We will have more contagion-type stuff to talk about because, boy, we're barely scratching the surface.
We oh my
have a
God.
Lot to get into.
We didn't even get to everything we wanted to talk about today. God.
I know, because we talked too much.
All right.
All right. Adios, amoebas.